with Renault, official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on,
Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Welcome again, everybody, to the GAA Championship Podcast. Now sponsored by Renault, the official car partner of the GAA, taking the passion of a nation to a whole new gear.
Renault are also the title sponsors of Renault GAA World Games 2019, taking place in Waterford from the 28th of July to August 1st, and the finals in Croke Park on August 2nd. With about 1,300 players from 10 regions all around the globe coming home to play on Irish soil, you've no excuse really not to make it down. You can find out more on the renault.ie/GAA, where you'll also get access to some special offers and exclusive deals to GAA members, so check it out now.
Joined in studio by Oisin and Paddy Kelly, obviously, and we've got a couple of big games, obviously, to get through this weekend. Something that was really, football was good. We enjoyed it. It was some good quality stuff. Thanks for coming, lads. How are you feeling?
Feeling good. Yeah, enjoyed Killarney.
Yeah, first big one there.
Not the first big game there. Yeah. I've had a couple of big ones there, but that was the first big game there. It was brilliant atmosphere and real sense of occasion about it. Even though it wasn't do or die, like I just really enjoyed it. I just really enjoyed some of the football Kerry played, to be honest. Yeah. You know, I know, the thing about it was that every time they got the ball, they thought, can I get this to the full forward line? And I thought Geaney and Clifford were very, very good. The diagonal ball all the time really, really worked for them. I'm just not sure who the third member of that party's going to be.
Of the Kerry forwards?
Yeah. I just think that they seem to be playing that wee triangle up front, and O'Donoghue was at the head of it for a lot of the time. It's just not really happening for him. And I think the harder the lad tries, the harder it seems to be getting for him. And he had that one opportunity, I suppose, to bag one. And I think if he had it would have brought him on a ton, actually. Yeah. You know, so I suppose that was the one thing that I was thinking is who is that one extra that they come in there and give them a wee bit more up front? Because if they could get that, that might be a formula to carry kicking on even more.
And I suppose that performance, did you expect Kerry to deal with them as handily as that? Because I don't think, like last week when we were speaking about it, I don't think anybody kind of saw, you know, that performance from Kerry, or maybe as poor as Mayo were on the day.
Yeah, no, I did expect it, because I expected Mayo to give Kerry opportunities. And when you have likes the forwards they have, when you have the direct running of Stephen O'Brien, so the question mark for me coming into the game was simple, and that was, you know, could Kerry improve keeper defensively as a whole and the middle of the field? And we talked about it the last time I was down. Midfield was going to be a problem. We're very good in midfield yesterday, squeezed the kickouts big time, but I just thought defensively it's not as if they played a system. You know, no particular system. So if you're not playing a particular system, you have to improve as an individual, or you have to change personnel. Crowley come in, I thought, did well. Sheehan Enright, I thought, was very, very good in a sort of workman-like, just I'm a defender point of view.
He read it well, and he got off a couple of passes.
And I'm just gonna do that. And we talked again the last day about you just needing a couple of stoppers, dogs, whatever way you want to call them, in defence. And he sort of fits that bill for me. Played centre half back. He picked up
McLaughlin, I'd say.
Yeah, he picked up McLaughlin for most of it. And then, even though Darren Cohen scored 3 points, I thought Foley had a good game. He won a lot of the races to the ball. But Jesus, also the keeper, just to mention him as well, I thought he looked a lot more assured yesterday. Kickouts were good. But Jesus, it's amazing the comparison. The thing I would compare yesterday was the runs of the Kerry forward line to the runs of the Mayo forward line. Now, I understand that Cohen, James Carr in particular, is very, probably, James Carr, probably of all the Mayo forwards, probably the most inexperienced. But every single run was straight. So even if he did win the ball, he's turning on an axis at 50 yards from goals. You know, even Andy, when Andy Moran come on, changed things a little bit because his runs were there and there. Across the lane and diagonal. And it just gave them an opportunity to get the ball further in and sort of looked as if they could have done a bit of damage that way. But so, like, Mayo up front, like, were really, really poor. But defensively, Kerry have improved. If the Kerry's going to win in All-Ireland, I'm going to put it up to the Dubs. Keeper, defence, midfield are the things that have to improve because I think they'll always do enough up front.
And absolutely. And I suppose, like, we're left wondering after the game, Paddy, like, is it after saying more about Kerry or Mayo, given, you know, how dominant Kerry were from start to finish, really?
Yeah, I think you're going to get a bit of that flip-flopping over the next couple of weeks. I mean, 3 weeks ago, Kerry were kind of being written off a small bit after poor performance against Cork. Mayo last week were being talked up after a couple of good wins. Now it's the other way around. So that group's going to be very, very interesting. Like, looking back to the Munster final, I was shocked at the time that Kerry conceded the kickouts to Cork. Like, they gave Cork, who were under savage pressure coming into it, they gave them an invitation to come at them and run at Kerry. You saw yesterday the difference they did when they squeezed up on Mayo's kickout. So that was kind of interesting looking back as to why they did in the first place. Yesterday they really squeezed the life out of Mayo's kickouts, put them under savage pressure. Obviously Moran was lifting in midfield. There was a lot of rustiness, I'd say, 3 weeks ago against Cork. There, a lot of lads looked as though they hadn't much football played. They were a lot sharper. Kerry looked very, very good. As O'Sheen said, looked at bigger tests to come now. Saturday or Sunday against Donegal will be huge. But Kerry looked very, very good. They looked sharp. But again, Donegal the weekend, they could come a cropper there, and all of a sudden you're doubting them again. So it's just going to be very, very interesting to see what way that group pans out.
And like you mentioned, you know, bullying or physical. Last time we spoke about Mayo, it was about the physicality of the game. And like, it's interesting, like, the physicality, I think, is all about your mindset as opposed to, you know, the size of your arms or your shoulders. And Kerry approached the game yesterday with the kind of a mindset that we were not going to be bullied in our home pitch. And like, it was so fascinating. Like, I'm not sure if you even made it in on time because you were stuck in traffic, but like, right before throw-in, you know, the one where they're banging Dave Moran and Aidan O'Shea, and like, Aidan O'Shea is around the place after, and he's on his tippy toes, and he's like some kind of a McGregor, you know, a prize fighter, kind of throwing shapes. And like, Moran just had a look in his face like that was kind of going, like, have you not seen my work? Like, are you trying to do this to me? Like, you need to Google me or something, because, you know, I'm David Moore, and I got some, you know, I can play. And he carried that into the game, and I thought he was, like, he stepped up. Like, Kerry have lacked leaders, like, in recent past, and Jesus, he was a leader, and Stephen O'Brien and Clifford and Jason Foley, as young as he was, Morley was a leader. Like, Kerry had leadership in spades yesterday, where they've lacked that, I think, in recent times, you know?
Yeah, because a lot of what went on yesterday, you know, considering the start, you know, there was a lot of powder puff stuff after that, you know? Yeah. Because I think it was one yellow card, maybe it finished up with two. That's very unlike a modern-day championship match. And then, again, just to make the point that it's not do or day, but you know, you're 100% right about Moran, but Moran needed that game. You know, he needed that game big time. But when he stepped inside and kicked the ball over the bar, that's David Moran. And as you say, you can get aggression and you can get I'm up for the game in so many ways. But one of the ways I thought David Moran yesterday was that everything was go forward stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it was nothing. He wasn't prepared to take that easy option. When I compare, just to switch on to Stephen O'Brien, but when I compare Stephen O'Brien and Conor O'Callaghan are cut from the same cloth, okay? So as soon as they get the ball, black spot. How do I get to the black spot, and how can I get there quickly? And, Jesus, when you're marking somebody who, that's the first thing and only thing in the mind.
Nightmare.
I know we'll get turned over now and again, but still, it's amazing what that brings. And I thought David Moran had a bit about that about him yesterday, was that, you know, everything I do is I'm going forward. And there was nothing about taking the easy option, because it would have been very easy for David Moran to take the easy option, considering the fact that he hasn't been playing I don't think he's been playing great, and he hasn't been playing with a huge amount of confidence either. So Yester will bring him on a ton.
Yeah, and he's been injured, obviously, for, you know, he's missed most of the year. He got married kind of last November or whatever it was.
That explains a lot.
That explains it all. And you know, honeymoon, he actually re-injured his knee doing the runs with the substitutes after one of the league games. How much of a sickener is that? And he missed a lot of it. But, like, you could see him coming yesterday, obviously. And you mentioned Stephen O'Brien. I thought you could really see the progression in him with the goal that he got, Paddy. Like the movement that he had, he came out, little spin move, dropped his shoulder, ball was popped in front of him, carried it long enough so that he attracted defender and goalkeeper before slipping across for Gainey for the tap-in. And it kind of, I think it just shows how much his game has evolved from where he was running down blind alleys, constantly getting turnovers, whereas now he's actually seeing a pass and he's got a bit of vision about him, you know?
Yeah, I remember the time it was Shane O'Shea was picking him up for the goal, and he spun him beautifully. And it kind of signified the legginess of Mayo. Now, I appreciate Shane O'Shea wasn't playing much lately, yeah, and he's just back, but that kind of epitomises where Mayo were at. They looked kind of lifeless a bit. Their tactics were fairly basic, as O'Shea mentioned, the forwards movement was poor, the kick passing, the basics. The lads in the Sunday game pointed out last night, like, it was just some of the basic stuff they did was criminal. Maybe mental fatigue. But again, I wouldn't write them off. I mean, this Mayo team have you know, faltered in the past and have come back. They have Meath above in Croke Park now at the weekend. Win that and you've got Donegal to come to Castlebar. And, you know, you win that, it could go down to score difference. I wouldn't write them off yet. They were obviously very, very poor yesterday. Killarney's an unbelievably difficult place to go. Like, I mean, granted, there was a poor showing. They would expect to have been closer, but Kerry haven't lost since, was it 95, is it?
4 years,
I know, that's
yeah,
that's majority of the time against Cork and Munster opposition. Like, but, you
still,
know,
it's still a serious record in Championship football, really, you know. And it was just, the whole day, though, like, you know, the temperature of the place, the crowd, it was a sellout. It was just like when Pádraig Duffy was dreaming this up, and Fitzmaurice mentioned this last week, like, this must have been his fantasy, like, of what was happening in Killarney, obviously, last Sunday, you know.
But the reverse of the tradition and the Kerry record in Killarney is that Mayo hadn't been beaten there in 10 years,
yes,
since 2009 or something, yeah, you know. So, like, they would have come down there, I would have thought, with a lot of confidence. And people talk about momentum. They had all the momentum going into the game. Like, I just fancied Kerry because I haven't seen Mayo play. I knew they wouldn't make it difficult for the forward line. Do you know, I knew the forward line would get an opportunity to play. And I think the Kerry forward line going into the game, they're not playing Tyrone. They're not playing Donegal. They're not going to be operating in small pockets of space. They had the opportunity to go and express themselves. They knew that going into the game, and this was their opportunity to show what they were all about. They will find it more difficult, especially that first-time ball, and like Donegal won't let that happen, you know. But there'll be more. You can keep talking about the Mayo defence, and Harrison stayed on Clifford yesterday for 78 minutes or whatever. Surely, like, even just switch Barrett across and see, does it, and it, you know, can that make any sort of difference whatsoever? But I just think on yesterday, I don't really think it mattered because, like, the war zone between the 245s was not a war zone. It was a picnic zone, you know? And that's Mayo's biggest downfall, was that between the 250s, they had no energy whatsoever.
And that is normally their greatest strength, obviously. Paddy, I suppose, like, One of the big things in the game, as an aside, I suppose, was Killian O'Connor, you know, becoming the all-time leader in championship scores, or top scorer in the championship history. And, like, there was, you know, there's a certain irony to the fact that it was kind of across the road where, for, you know, from where Gooch grew up and played all his ball with Dr. Crokes. But, like, where are you with Killian O'Connor? And like, you know, he's 27 years of age, 52 championship games, and, you know, the massive scores that he's after bringing in. Where are you with Killian O'Connor's record, or you know, this idea of, you know, maybe Mayo are still lacking a marquee forward or whatever it is? I mean, if you've got the all-time leading scorer in championship history, you can't be peddling that line.
No, I think it's unfair on him, and some people have peddled out the idea that he hasn't won All-Ireland, to that he can't be put up with the greats. No, I think, you know, in terms of natural talent, I don't think he's up there with the likes of the Gooch or that kind of category of players, but phenomenal player for the last 10 years. It's certainly not his fault that Mayo haven't got over the line. I mean, he's dragged them through so many games. He's just an unbelievably clinical finisher. He's a leader on that team right from when he came in as a young fella. Like his attitude was, he was kind of snarling and he was aggressive and he was, you know, got to the pitch of things very, very quickly. Just like, I suppose it's an anticlimax for him to do it below there now and in such a hammering, but I'm sure when he looks back, and he's still only, what, 27,
yeah,
still a long way to go. I think anyone who doubts his quality, you know, is probably being a bit harsh on him, but I think there's a few players in that Mayo camp who are kind of lightning rods for kind of criticism. Phenomenal talent. Like, you forget Mayo are missing a few more players like Dermot O'Connor, Ryan, those fellas. Like, they have a lot of games, a lot of miles on the clock, even in recent weeks. So, you know, from Mayo point of view, I think of all teams, they'll be able to cope with that defeat. You know, Horan's experienced manager, they have a lot of experienced players. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they come back and meet up next Sunday. They'll be able to write that game off as just a poor game. They have two more chances to rescue their season.
Yeah, I wouldn't write them. Geez, you couldn't write them off, because we're sick of writing them off, and they keep bouncing back like a basketball. So they're always there. Where are you? I'd be interested just on the Killian O'Connor one. What's your take on him and his legacy, I suppose?
Yeah, no, I've always liked Killian O'Connor. I think yesterday he could have been even more efficient than he was. Missed a couple of free kicks, missed a couple of opportunities from play. Obviously the goal chance, crossbar. So I think he probably isn't at his most efficient, but again, he's a player who's only back a couple of weeks. He'll improve for that. But I've always liked Killian O'Connor. I think he's very, very underestimated. A couple of years ago, when they played Dublin, I'm not going to even attempt to know what year it is, because all them finals roll into one another for me. But the day that himself and Dean Rock had a kickoff in Croke Park, 19 free kicks between them, and Killian O'Connor missed one, and people come out of the ground criticizing him, and like as a free taker myself, like, just to have that amount of consistency and that sort of accuracy is phenomenal on a day like that with the pressure on. And he's done it under pressure, and he's much more than just a free taker, you know. And I tell you another thing that he's added to his game, and it's not going to get him into the record books, but he's one of the hardest working corner forwards that you're going to come across, as far as his tackling and how aggressive he is with defenders when they're coming out with the ball. So yeah, he's very much a complete player. Paddy's right in that, you know, a lot of people will think he's not as silky as others, but he's got a lot going on. He's got two good feet, and he's I said this yesterday, I think people might laugh at me, but I genuinely think he could double up on what he's scored already. Like, you know what I mean? He could get very, very close to it. I mean,
yeah,
he's a player who, even though he's 27, probably has another, for me, 7-8 years. He's going to get some opportunities. Things don't change. If the powers that be don't change things, he's going to have the opportunity to play in a couple of games where he's going to get his 2.8 or 2.9, you know. So he probably could go very close to that, which, when you think about it, is crazy numbers. It's
outrageous,
phenomenal.
Yeah, that's outrageous. But and like, if he plays on as long as Andy Moore is playing, he's gonna have that kind of longevity and the chance, yeah, to go do that, I suppose. We'll you know, we can come back to the Kerry stuff, but I think in general, the game, while it wasn't a hugely competitive game from you know, because Mayo never really showed up in the game, but it was enjoyable to watch the way they played ball, wasn't it?
Was, yeah, the first, I have to say, the first 20-25 minutes of the game just absolutely flew by for me. I was just really enjoying it. Sounds sad, but I really enjoyed the movement of really good forwards. Kerry have it. A couple of the Dubs boys obviously have it. Bernard Brogan had it in his pomp. Cahill McSheehan has it. Cahill McSheehan's movement still for me is right up there with the two boys yesterday, with Geaney and Clifford. But just the movement and that is just... It is a joy to watch when football is played like that. Now, to counteract that, they're not going to be allowed to do that. You know, yeah, a lot of other teams aren't going to allow them to put that ball in. But still, I just thought Kerry showed yesterday that they can mix it up a wee bit. You know, they can make those runs. Crowley made a couple of runs. White made a couple of runs. Stephen O'Brien, obviously, you know, get a little bit from Spillane as well. So they know now that they can mix it up. There was one James O'Donoghue come out the field, had one ball, and I thought, now's the opportunity to run it. And he just, he kicked it anyway. And I just thought, that was one example of, that's when you got to know, because you're going to have, that's a snippet of what they're going to experience over the next couple of weeks, and that's when they need to make the right decision in that area around the from the middle of the field on. But no, it was some of it was lovely to watch.
Like. Yeah, and the movement allowed the kick passing, obviously, and like we spoke about David Moore and all of their kick passing. It was just lovely and controlled and fluid. The fluency they moved the ball from back to front, because every first touch was, we want to look forward and move the ball on. And you know, from that point of view, it was obviously very pleasing in the eye. While the level of competition maybe will go up in the next couple of weeks.
The big thing for me with this group is, I don't see Mayo beat me and bring that down to Castlebar for a head-to-head with them and Donegal, because that's what the Super 8s, you're talking about visions of Super 8s, that's what the Super 8s all about. Mm. You know, something really, really riding on the game and in Castlebar with Donegal's fans and Mayo's fans. Whew, yeah. You know, that's something to look forward to.
Yeah, or get the ticket. Paddy, from switching lanes, I suppose, to that Cork and Dublin game. It's funny, on Sunday morning, we were just talking about it outside, like in the most Jim Gavin-esque possible way of dropping a bombshell. Like, you know, it was funny. It was like, I was just, you know, again, he was going out to the shops and kind of going, will you pick me up some bread and cheese and milk? And, oh, by the way, Dermot Connolly is back playing football with Dublin, by the way, you know. Sorry about the whole transfer to Boston didn't work out for you, Dermot, but it's great to have you back. What did you? I will get to the game after, but what did you? What was your take on the Jim Gavin-esque bombshell?
Yeah, it couldn't have been more Jim Gavin. Just very low key. Very, very interesting. I thought his days were done under Jim Gavin this summer, especially. I mean, he was heading to Boston, but for visa issues. Just very, very interesting to see that Connolly's up for going back. Like, we're mid July now. It's two more games, Super 8s, and then on to the semi-finals. Just the dynamic of him coming back in, he's obviously a big player, a very popular player amongst the group by all accounts, but just him coming back into the group, like, you look at Bernard Brogan, can't even make the 26. Does he get parachuted straight in? And again, I don't know, was he training this week or is he just going to start, you know, Tuesday night? These things we don't know. Was he training much with Vincent's? I mean, obviously the difference at club and county level is huge, but I mean, it'll just be interesting to see, will he come in if he doesn't get picked? You know, if he doesn't get picked for the 26th for the first day, is he happy to last the course? If he's on the bench, I mean, there's a few, you probably look at a few places, the half forward line is stacked. I mean, Scully and Howard do his job every bit as good as he used to do it. They probably don't have the class maybe going forward as he has. Midfield is somewhere where he could come into play. You know, Fenton's obviously the Rolls Royce of a player there, but McCauley next to him, if McCarthy is needed back the pitch, Connolly could be the option to come in there. It's just like, you think
it's sickening. It's sickening,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it is. Like, you think they're not.
Like things weren't bad enough already, and Jim goes and drops his shopping list with Dermot Connolly coming back in. I mean, it was. It's not like they, like, from the outside, you wouldn't think Jim Gavin needs to bring him back in here, because they've got guys that are doing the job like you're talking about. But like, is it nearly? And we don't know the intricacies of what's gone on, obviously, but is it nearly an admission of maybe my bench isn't being as impactful as I think it might need to be further down the line, and I need to get him back into the mix?
I think Jim Gavin could possibly be proving an even bigger point, that he's going to bring Dermot Connolly in, and Dermot Connolly might not see any sort of game time whatsoever. And I think that's quite possible.
Is it though? Surely Connolly wouldn't agree to come back into the mix unless there was some assurances. You don't think so?
I don't think, with Jim Gavin, I don't think there's any assurances. Deadpan, giving nothing away in interviews. As you say, you know, you could put a, I can picture, you know, the local club putting up on the forum, we're having a forum night to discuss the upcoming championship, and we're having two of the senior players, and we're bringing in Brendan Devaney and Kevin Cassidy and Lionel Messi and Oisín McConville or whatever. Like, that's don't tell me Jim Gavin doesn't get how important a story this is, regardless of, you know, whether he comes in and plays. Like, don't tell me Jim Gavin doesn't get that, but that for me is Jim Gavin down to a T. And don't be surprised. My own take on it is, and maybe I have too much time on my hands to think about this, but my own take on it is that I think Gavin will bring Dermot Connolly in, and Dermot Connolly will see no game time. With the opportunity to perhaps be part of this, if he sticks in there and he keeps ahead with a view to being part of next year's six in a row.
It's just, it gives another fascinating kind of dimension to the whole thing, because we will be wondering, like, first of all, does he make it 26? And then after that, does he go and get some time? And it's just going to be another fascinating twist to the next 4 or 5 games.
Like, you can't see him being part of the squad next week. You can't see him being in the 20. I can't see him being in the 26 next week. There may be an opportunity down the lane to get him into the 26 over the next couple of weeks, because not only does that keep... does that keep him interested, but also keeps the opposition guessing too, you know?
Yeah, and you know, from a football perspective, I think Connolly is an absolute class act. Like, he's just such, like you talked about Silky earlier, the guy has got such an array of abilities and can manipulate the ball so well off both feet and everything. He's just everything you could possibly want a footballer. So from a football perspective, it's great to see the guy back. From everybody trying to close the gap on Dublin, it's not what you want to see for the interest of the championship, obviously. With that game yesterday, Paddy, you know, Cork were, you know, it was tough enough in the last 10 minutes, obviously, and it was thankful that Connolly wasn't around to add more misery to it. But, I mean, they obviously put up a good show.
Yeah, Cork were very decent. It's a strange when you lose by 13 points and you're still fairly positive, but that's just the reality of where Dublin are at and where Cork are coming from. Cork were very, very good right from the off. They kicked the first 4 points. They went man to man. They squeezed up, and like with that, if there's one slip, they're in, and that showed a few times. The Dubs could easily have racked up a couple of goals before the late onslaught. Conor Callaghan blasted over. Mannion hit the kind of the upright, and second half things could have gone a bit earlier. But Cork, to their credit, showed massive heart. Start of the third quarter, like, I thought the Dubs would come out and blitz Cork, but it was the other way around. Cork held in, and they were 4 points down with 10 minutes to go. Mark Collins had a chance to put it to three, missed the free, and the Dubs kind of just then got the next goal. And just the last 10 minutes, you can kind of write it off from a Cork point of view, because I mean, they haven't played at that level in that intensity for a long, long time. So it was very, very encouraging. Just everything was pretty good. Like the backs, you felt sorry for the backs, because to a man, like Flav, Lockery, they were going man to man on Mannion and Conor Callaghan, these lads, and as well as you'll do for 50-60 minutes, like how tiring that is on the body and the mind. And they punched holes, the Dubs punched holes, but Cork can be very, very proud of their efforts. A lot of things they did very, very well. There's certainly lessons to be learned, but it's very encouraging. I mean, if you rewind the clock back 3 months, 4 months at the end of the league, we were it was doom and gloom. Now all of a sudden we're saying we're not out of our depth here, maybe, you know, a bit of development over the winter. So look, all very positive. We're going to face Tyrone up there again on Saturday, a completely different kettle of fish. Just from watching the highlights on the game, they'll just a totally different proposition. Yesterday's or Saturday's game was a lovely game, a lot of kick passing, a lot of open play, one-on-ones, a lot of scores, but just very positive from Cork.
Yeah, and like, if you finish the game after 60 minutes, like Cork are really taking massive credit out of the game. And while they still get a great deal of credit, it just shows, I suppose, where Dublin are, like, in terms of the depth that they can call upon already before the addition of Connolly, and how just their fitness and their conditioning and they're just... That last 10 minutes is when they go, and they've done it to Mayo, they've done it to Kerry. They've been so good in that final quarter of games that when you are there with them and you stick with them so long, they still have that extra gear that they just go and kill you ruthlessly in those last couple of minutes, you know?
Yeah, and interestingly, they had only used one sub, I think, by the time kind of 60, 61 minutes came, which I thought was a bit slow. Going back to Connolly, maybe the bench isn't as trusted. Now there's a couple of lads like Johnny Cooper and McCarthy who came on now who are coming back from injuries, but just everything about them, like, you know, you talk about forward units, you think there's workhorses there. Scully and Howard are workhorses, but they're class footballers. Yeah. Howard was coming back to pitch and he was jinking, taking on a man and creating that initial overlap. At one stage, Cork pinned Dublin and they forced him back out about 50, 60 yards to midfield. I thought this was great. I think it was Scully made one little break and Fenton, the run was made, Fenton was through, popped it over the bar. It's just so hard to see how you beat them. You know, we've all seen the blanket defence tried against them, and they're so patient now, and they're so kind of adept at dealing with that. the man-to-man stuff for Cork worked. I mean, they put them on the back foot right from the off. Kevin Driscoll ran, kicked the score. Rory Dean the same. Kerrigan was being picked up by Cian Sullivan. He was kind of floating and finding pockets of space for scores. There was chinks of light there for other teams to say how you go at the Dubs, but they're just phenomenal. Like the forward line there of Mannion, Costello, like Rock came in, Conor Callan, Kilkenny, like they're just lethal off both feet. They just work the score, their efficiency in front of goal. There's no reckless, crazy shots. I'd say the first shot I saw that was doubtful was Philly McMahon in the 75th or 6th minute or something like that. All the rest of them were just around the D, popping it over. So just, they're frightening to see. You know, they'll take Roscommon, I'd imagine, at home on, or sorry, in the neutral game on Saturday, and they'll go up to.
It's at home.
It's at home. I was fishing there, and then go to Omagh for the last game, and you know, you're not too sure whether topping the group and being second, you know, does it make a difference given what will come from the other group between Kerry, Donegal, and Mayo. So look, Dubs look streets ahead of everyone else, and they look just class.
Streets ahead, O'Shane.
Yeah, no, they're different gravy and not even playing at a, I don't think at their optimum just yet. I think they'll think they are in a lot of ways find their feet. I still think there is an opportunity for Dean Rock. I think you know, Costello, he's done okay, but he probably hasn't just hit the heights yet, and that has given a chink of light to Dean Rock. And you know what, Dean Rock has changed dramatically in the last 12 months, and you know, again, man management in that, you know, he's got a real kick up the arse in the last couple of weeks, maybe in the last couple of months actually, because he hasn't seen a lot of game time. You know, he's come off the bench, but he's looked phenomenal. He's razor sharp.
When you say he's changed a lot in the last 12 months,
I think he's a lot more. I think since he's come in over the last couple of weeks, he's looked a lot more aggressive, and he looks like a player who's playing with a bit of a chip on his shoulder now. Right. And you know, it hasn't sounds strange, but hasn't really worked out for Cormac Costello. I don't think. I think one of the things about going back to the free taking is sometimes free taking can take a little bit from certain people's games. Other people, it gets them into the game and they kick on, they take confidence from that. Dean Rock is one of those players, I think, that, you know, he sees free kicks very much as an important facet of his game, but he's tried to improve that. And I think he realises now how much he needs to improve that. And Jim Gavin leaving him on the bench has given him the opportunity to do that. And as I say, just playing with a bit of a chip on his shoulder. And I think that's another layer that Dublin can add to it, because, you know, him playing well in there and nailing every single free kick, again, just brings them on to an even different level.
And Costello probably wasn't as reliable as he would have liked to have been yesterday. And Rock was on after 45 minutes and did well, obviously, with the freeze.
Yeah, I think Costello maybe missed three between 45s and freeze. But to be fair to him, he kicked the beauty off his left from play. The goal just before halftime, it was him coming in the burst, popped it into McCauley. But again, as Oshie mentioned, like Jim Gavin has the luxury of telling, you know, Dean Rock, sit on the bench there and wait your turn. Same, he could happen with Connolly, he might have to sit his turn. Bernard Brogan's not even getting the 26. They're just, that forward line is unbelievable. There's just, I've never seen any better in terms of they all have a scoring threat. I mean, Scully came in and banged in the third goal, fantastic player. Kilkenny is more of a worker, but again, he floated around the D and got a couple of scores. They're just very impressive. Like Cork conceded the kick out in the first half, without completely conceding it. They were going zonal, but not really pushing up from midfield and the half back. So Dublin kind of sucked back an extra man, and Cluxton, just phenomenal accuracy. I'd say he kicked one kick out long in the first half that Cork won, but second half Cork did a better job in it. I know the lads last night in the Sunday game against targeted, you have to target Cluxton's kick outs if you're going to have any chance. Cork in the second half got a bit of joy off it. Kevin O'Driscoll in particular was outstanding, winning breaking ball. And that kind of kept the game interesting. Cork, surprisingly again, Cork got kicked off easy in the first half. Dublin didn't really squeeze as aggressively as I thought they would. Second half again, they changed. Both teams seemed to change their tact at halftime. But and that led to the third or fourth goal from White's mistake. But Dubs, Dubs are interesting. They're like, it looks so easy for them. Even when Cork were had them rattled, they weren't really rattled. They were very, very comfortable. Just kept doing the right thing. I know it's boring, but the process and all that.
They don't get rattled though, do they?
No.
It's like it's Jim Gavin thing. They just don't get rattled.
Yeah, I think
so. One team can rattle them.
Oh yeah.
Well, at Mayo, I was the only team, and you know, you go back to Cluxton's kickouts a couple of years ago in the final, and they basically had a meltdown. And that's the only time I've ever seen that happen, and that was Mayo just absolute manicness. That was basically
it. He had a meltdown, but he still lost three kickouts or something in the half, and we're calling that a meltdown. You know what I mean? But out of 20 something kickouts.
Yeah, but I think it was the timing of it. Do you know what I mean? It was the timing of it, and they came three in a row. You know, yeah. So I think that's a Stephen Cluxton meltdown.
It is, but I mean that tells you the standards that we're looking at them. They lose three kickouts out of 20 something, and we're calling it a meltdown. But
maybe let's go with a meltdown late. Mini meltdown.
Yeah, I mean, look at like Fenton, obviously, lads. You call him a Rolls Royce, like Jack McCaffrey. Like, what is Jack McCaffrey in modern football? If the guy is like a Ferrari, you want to call him a car? I don't know what he is. He's unmarkable. He's an unmarkable halfback who gives so much to their forwards and makes it so easy because he's running through the heart of their defence. He's sucking defenders towards him and then has the good sense to slip it out to guys like Kilkenny, who's tapping ball over the bar for fun.
Yeah, for the first goal, like he got the ball down the corner and he was coming at the Cork player. It was Sean White, and Sean White showed him inside to the crowd. And to be fair, Cork half bottled him up. He fell to the ground. He just spun and snuck it in. Cork would be unlucky there because the right thing, they put him into the crowd. He was phenomenal in the first half going forward. The speed off, and there was one stage Luke Connolly was chasing him, and just you felt from like he just gassed him. He missed one in the first half as well, but he actually went quiet then for maybe 15-20 minutes until he sparked in the last 15. He created the third goal. He took a fellow on, created the overlap, pops to Conor Callan. Fifth goal, was to Fenton. It was his kick pass He was just phenomenal. He was a standout player. But again, you could see him get injured and it not rattling the Dubs. They just have, you know, and you could say the same about any player. Fenton to me maybe is the only player they couldn't replace. But like Howard caught a few balls yesterday. He's well able to be in midfield. You know, James McCarthy's is back fit. They're just so balanced and they don't rely on any one player. You know, you could say it to Kerry if you lose Clifford, you're under pressure, or say that about any team.
Yeah.
The Dubs, I don't get that feeling about any of their, bar maybe Stephen Cluxton. That's the caveat if someone took him off.
Yeah, Cluxton and Fenton probably, you know, other than that, they can replace anybody. Cork did a really good job. You know, we talk about that incident with McCaffrey, and McCaffrey has one thing that he needs to keep consistent, and that is that decision making. And it's making that decision when you're going at that pace, and that can't be easy because you're trying to get a picture of what's around him. And that's the one facet I think that Jack McCaffrey has improved on since he's come back, is that, you know, when he is making those runs, that 9 times out of 10 he's making the right decision. He's popping it, or he's going his own score. And again, that point was proved the other night. But you know, I have two questions on Cork. I know it's not my job to ask the questions, but I have two questions on Cork, and one of them similar to the last day. Why only now? And the second thing is, have they the nuance when they go to Cork or when they go to Tyrone, faced with a different picture in front of them? Have they got the nuance to change things up enough or a bit? Or
yeah, well, not that I have the answers, but like why only now? Like the league, I suppose, in relegation for the league, looking back in it, like I don't think Cork gave themselves a chance. They, after the hidings they got last year, they went defensive in the first 3-4 games and it just was not working. I saw three of them and it did not suit them. They didn't know how to play the game. Understandably why they went that way after last year, but so they changed tact and they're really pushing on in Cork. Like Cork teams, club teams don't tend to do defensive tactics. It's very much traditional, you know, flat out, like let's say the Bears would be the strongest team at the moment. It's just all out press. That suits Cork, I think. You know, the last couple of years obviously have been very hit and miss. There's been the odd performance here and there, but do they have the nuance to go and play Tyrone in the blanket defence? It's a very different proposition. This time last year we got absolutely hockeyed by Tyrone in Portlaoise. It was men against boys. Like the Dubs, do get numbers back, but they come back with the ball. They'll come back and track their men. Tyrone will just sit back and say, come at us. And that's a completely different proposition. Cork were impressive, though, in how they held the ball. They, like, Hurley didn't get much yesterday because he wasn't allowed to. Keen Sullivan sat pretty deep. So what Cork did was they ran at them and they exposed maybe the lack of numbers or the kind of disjoint element of the Dubs kind of moving on players. Against Tyrone, there'll be very little kickball into Collins and Hurley. It'll all be through the hands. Paul Kerr going to mount the ball, kind of looping around the 45, just popping, giving goals, just waiting for an opening. Cork's efficiency is going to have to be massive. They're going to have to kick massive points from distance, because Tyrone will force it to kick from difficult angles, long distances, and those wides or drop shots deflate you, and they'll hit you on the break. So, look, Cork have a huge ask to go up and beat Tyrone up in Croke Park. But the fact that I'm even thinking it's possible this year, from where we came from, says a lot. Now, at the same time, look, all we've beaten is Limerick and Laois. You know, granted, we're credible performance against Kerry and the Dubs, but you know, it's going to be very difficult. I give Cork a chance because I think there's a great buzz, a great confidence about the team, but just they're facing a completely different animal on Saturday, and it's whether they're ready for that kind of level of intensity inside the Tyrone blanket.
And does that answer your question?
No, I just think that that's the point. The point for me is that they can absolutely go up there and give a good account of themselves. And
can they win it?
They can press. I can't, in my head, I can't see how they can. Because I just think that Tyrone are the masses just frustrating teams. And teams like Cork who are coming off the back of, you know, positive performances, and This is such a nice game for Tyrone, I think. I just hope that when Cork do go up there, that one thing they do is push and press. And if they push and press, they have some semblance of an opportunity. But in order for Cork to have a chance, they need to change a little bit, and they need to be a little bit of a mirror image. I know it doesn't suit them, but they need to be a little mirror image at times from set plays of what Tyrone are and what Tyrone are all about, because Tyrone just have that knack and ability now of just picking teams off. You know, it's picking teams off, and it's very a lot of it is contrived. Like, apart from McShane, a lot of it's set players. A lot of it is, you know, from Morgan to Cavanagh to Donnelly to one more forward to score, you know, to getting a free kick, to setting it down, to organisation. As soon as that free kick is awarded, you know what Tyrone's setup's going to be, you know? So they just need to push and press a little bit and put them under pressure. Let Tyrone doubt themselves, because Tyrone are by no means the team that people think they are.
And I suppose going up to the Hyde, like, people were giving Roscommon a fair shout, because Roscommon have played well and they've been tough and physical and they've played some good football with Cox and these guys. But like Tyrone, the game was still competitive, obviously, and Roscommon gave a very good account of themselves. Tyrone just held them at arm's length, and like they scored so much easier than Roscommon were able to do, and that's probably, you know, what you're talking about. The way they set up defensively is so difficult to find enough space and enough time to actually get your shot off when you're not under savage pressure that you're going to have a chance to put it over the bar. But then the way they just get forward and hit McShane and these guys, it was, you know, they were rolling obviously above in the height.
Yeah, and Patrick, you make the point about efficiency, and that is, you know what I mean, you can't afford to give the ball away in that final 30. You can't afford to drop the ball short, and the efficiency, you have to be kicking the ball over the bar. But Cork can get at them with that bit of pace, like, you know, straight down the middle of the defence. That's exactly what Donegal did. You know, the template is there for against Tyrone, but they have changed and they are a good bit more defensive than they were against Donegal. But there's certain areas of that template that you can use, and one of them is just direct running and at pace.
Yeah, I don't think Cork have faced this style since maybe early in the league, maybe the likes of Fermanagh. So, like, Cork were very good against Kerry, against Dublin, because they play football. They don't play football. They say, you know, you take us on, we'll take you on. With Tyrone, it's very basketball style. It's, you know, everyone goes back, everyone defends, everyone drifts forward. Cork's style, just, they're not used to it. The running game does suit us. We have powerful runners, the likes of Rory Deeney and Maguire, the two boys in the half-back line, Liam O'Donovan, Matty Taylor. We do have the players who can play that game. It's just whether, you know, Cork will play off the cuff. They'll try and give ball in, and in against that system, like, they'll just hoover it up. Cork can't afford to give impetus to Tyrone and get turned over. Again, I go back 12 months, and I don't know how much can change in 12 months with two teams, but the difference was phenomenal up in Portlaoise. Tyrone were absolutely streets ahead of Cork, physically, tactically, every which way. Now, as I said, Cork are going well. They're in good form, good spirits, and so I do give them a fighting chance. They need to go after everything. Morgan's kickouts need to be squeezed up on. Now, I know that plays the risk of him going over the top of you, but it'll be interesting to do Tyrone squeeze on Cork's kickouts, because the last couple of games, Kerry and Dublin both have given it fairly easy to Mark White. So, look, Cork, there'll be a lot of questions asked of Cork. And again, there'll be no shame in Cork losing to Tyrone. And again, not to be talking about as if we're a small fish, but for Cork, the Super 8 is all about credit performances and build for next year. Get that panel coming back in the winter, mad for road, you know, in the gym, solid, realising they have to bulk up, they have to get more athletic. And coming back into the spring, winning Division 3 League, having a crack off Munster, and then saying we're good enough for, you know, we've experienced Super 8s from last year. So, look, things are looking fairly rosy in the guard for Cork. Well, that sounds defeatist. I think we'll rattle Tyrone. Whether we'll have enough to get over the line is another question, but certainly a lot of positives for Cork.
Did they tell you much with that win over Roscommon? Did they, you know, Niall Sludden obviously looked more of a factor, Petey Hart, Matty Donnelly. Did they show you much? Are they going to be a threat?
You know, going into that game, you would think that Roscommon had a chance, but Tyrone just did, like, you know, a ruthlessly efficient job on them. But they still haven't, nothing's changed from, you know, they still haven't really proved anything to me from the Donegal game. I thought they would get back on track and get to this stage, but, you know, there is I actually think we could be talking about Tyrone getting to a semi-final and not really knowing. And I think Tyrone, you know, depending on who they meet at semi-final stage, could struggle, because I think they will win against Cork. It's a nothing game then against Dublin for both sides. So really, regardless of what happens in that game, Tyrone lose, Tyrone win, you're going to make excuses for it. And then, you know, you're talking about Tyrone maybe going into a semi-final and still not knowing a lot about themselves, which is probably the most worrying thing for them. That doesn't worry me in the slightest. but you're probably talking about getting to that stage and maybe not really being that sure of themselves. And maybe I still think those lingering doubts are there. That, you know, you shut down Petey Hart, you shut down Matty Donnelly, and maybe McShane. That, you know, Tyrone are in real bother. Now, I understand that's an ask, but it's been done before, and it's been done actually on a fairly consistent basis, except for they haven't had the McShane thing. But Petey Hart has been, you know, in some of the big games, Petey Hart has been completely nullified, and that's where Tyrone have started to struggle. So I still think we've probably learned not a big pile about them, except for they are a resilient crowd. You know, and they do keep bouncing back.
And I suppose, in fairness, I mean, if you look at the other qualifiers, obviously, Meath were beaten, you know, Mayo were beaten, and what was the last one? Mayo and Cork, obviously, yeah. So, like, they were the only one of the qualifiers that actually went to the provincial winner. Like, all the rest of them, you could say each of the rest of them, really, like, Mayo looked flat and dead on their feet. They had no energy. Cork, while they had energy for 60 minutes, they fell off a cliff kind of after that point. Meath, the same. Meath were actually leading Donegal and putting up a massive show. But Tyrone still going up to the Hyde and were able to gut it out. And in a tight game, it was only a four-point game in the finish, they still had the quality defensively and with McShane offensively to still put that game to bed. And it was I thought that was a big win for them going up there, and it says a bit about their credentials, I suppose, moving forward.
I just think that Roscommon have been disappointing in the Super 8s both last year and you know in that game this year. I just think that they seem to get to this stage and then like they seem to question everything the other day. You know what I mean? Like you can see a lot of time. The middle sector of the game when Tyrone really got on top that, you know, they seem to be so unsure of themselves. And I haven't seen that actually from Roscommon all year. And for me, I thought that was a really disappointing aspect. That I didn't ever felt Roscommon really thought that they could beat Tyrone. And going into the game, I thought they had a phenomenal chance.
Yeah, like I suppose out of the games the last day, three or four, the four favourites won. That's the reality of it. Tyrone, granted they weren't provincial champions, but the four favourites won. Like Roscommon, again as a Cork person, I was hoping for Roscommon win because that game, that group now unfortunately looks like it could go to dead rubbers in the last game, especially in Cork. Like now that our hurlers are out, it'd be great if we had a game in Cork, a big game in Cork, welcome Roscommon with something to play for. Unfortunately now, if things go against us this weekend, the lads have 2 weeks training with Cork, where you know they're looking towards their club campaign afterwards. The other group looks like it could be a cracker. So, like this is the beauty of the Super 8s, and then the negative of group stages is the possibility of dead rubbers. The Tyrone Dublin game could be a nothing game. Then you know you look at the other group and say, would you rather Donegal, Kerry or Mayo? It's a toss of a coin possibly. So. For Roscommon, you forget like Tyrone were Ireland finalists last year. You know, they're a Division 1 team. It's a big ask. They're a seasoned team with a very settled management and all that. They're, you know, they tick all the boxes there. So Roscommon will go and, you know, they'll get beaten by Dublin. They'll look back and say, was the year successful or not? They still won Connacht. They got relegated from Division 1. So it's very, very hard to make the breakthrough to that top four or five teams.
I think O'Shea was harsh too. You're dead right. There's no problem telling them. That was very harsh what you said about Roscommon.
No, I know it might have been harsh, but I do stick by it. They were pathetic last year in the Super 8.
But that was their first year in there now, and they were really punching above their weight last year.
It was everybody's first year, so...
Yeah, but for them to get to that stage of the competition...
I do accept that, but I still think they're in a different place now this year. You know, the provincial champions now, they've won two provincial champions in the last two provincial championships in the last
three, so
they've arrived, like, you know what I mean, they're not the new kids on the block anymore, the physical and all that there, and I didn't see enough of that the other day, I thought.
Harsh, but fair, I think. The last one, as we obviously, was just the Donegal and Meath game that we just touched on. Meath, again, I suppose, a little bit like Roscommon, gave a credible performance of themselves. When I'm very high on Donegal, you're probably a little less so, but... What did that one tell you? It was a strange one. I was getting the scores through, obviously. I was in Killarney and like Meath were leading with, was it 15 minutes to go or something like that? And obviously, a little bit like Dublin did to Cork, Donegal put the foot to the pedal and pushed on and blasted them away in the last 15.
Yeah, and I suppose the thought process before that group was that Meath would be the cannon fodder in that group. And it was great to see them put up a show. That was only the last 10 minutes, obviously, as they pulled away. So for that group now, you're looking, Mayo have a challenge to play Meath at the weekend, and Kerry will have to go to Meath in the last game, where you can see Meath putting it up to them. So Meath can be very, very positive about their showing. Obviously, as I said, first time into the Super 8s, you know, a Division 2 team, you know, they're out of their depth a small bit this year. But again, it's for them, similarly to Cork, it's about development. You know, in the highlights, they looked fantastic yesterday. They looked as though they put up to the Donegal. Donegal's big players, I suppose, showed there in the last 15, 20 minutes. You know, Michael Murphy and McBrearty and those lads were flying it. So, look, we still don't know yet, Donegal, where they're at. I mean, up in Ballybofey is a desperate spot to go to. So, Meath can be very, very proud of their efforts.
Ballybofey is a lovely spot, man. He's a desperate spot.
He's doing nothing for the tourists.
to play in as opposed to visit.
That's an important distinction there. What about you and Donegal, that one?
More or less sort of the way I thought it would go. A little bit, like a bit of a carbon copy of Dubs, only on a slightly smaller scale. 1-3, 1-4, I think Donegal got off the bench, Oisín Gallan, real talent. Yeah, O'Donnell, Owen McHugh. So yeah, Donegal and still expect a little bit more on the win by 9 points. So yeah, you know, they're definitely, but Meath and Cork both have the opportunity next weekend to blow both groups apart, you know. Mm-hmm. And whereas we said that it's difficult for Cork to go to Tyrone, difficult for Meath, you know, to see Meath beating Mayo and Croke Park, but also not impossible. So there is big opportunities next weekend for both of those teams, for Meath and Cork, to blow those groups apart and give us all an unbelievable final weekend.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and that's the hope, isn't it, really? I mean, if we can go into the last weekend with something to play for in all of them, that's really what you're looking for.
Yeah, the reality next week for Cork Saturday night is a knockout game. You lose against Tyrone and you're done. So, and the same for Meath and Mayo. Yeah. Whoever loses there is done. So I think you're going to have a savage bite in these games the weekend, because it's knockout championship for three or four teams. You know, like the group one with Kerry and Meath and Mayo and Donegal is still wide open. The other group looks as though the two favourites are taking a grip of that. Looking forward, then you're looking at whether the semi-final pairings matter or not in terms of jockeying for positions. Is it a case of Group A wanting to avoid the dubs and winning your group? Although up in Omagh, they may not be flat out against Tyrone, but knowing the dubs, they will. So the Super 8s this year have kind of caught fire, I think. You know, last year was a bit of a damn squib. Certainly the change and putting it to provincial winners' grounds adds to the occasion, adds to the spectacle. You know, it was great to see every ground was packed yesterday or over the weekend. So there's positives. Barcroft Park, I suppose. But I suppose, this is another year, I think, the Super 8s. This year certainly will make people think, yeah, this has a future, but this whole thing could be scrapped at the end of this year and the format could be changed. So it's good to see the top teams play good football in the height of the summer.
It's worked. The first weekend worked and it's been a positive weekend for football, and hopefully for the next 2 weeks we'll get something similar and it'll keep progressing the way it'll go. But we're going to wrap it up, lads. So again, I just want to thank Oisín McConville and Paddy Kelly for their time and coming in, and thank you for listening. And as always, you can tune into iTunes or SoundCloud or irishexaminer.com/podcast. And as always, more than welcome to leave a rating or a review. Oisín always loves reading those and his time off, okay? Thanks a million. Thanks for listening.
With Renault, passion for what drives you. Official car partner of the GAA.